Ray Brown's Talkin' Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Route 6A, Orleans, Cape Cod. On the web at birdwatchersgeneralstore.com. By the Boston Harbor Island Alliance. Minutes away, worlds apart. Go to bostonharborislands.org for more information.
Good morning. Welcome to our show number 509. Not to worry, it's just some big old snowy owls making their way down into southern Canada in the upper parts of the lower 48. Not showing up in the numbers of a year ago, but reports are on the increase, including kind of in our backyard at Logan Airport in Boston. We remember last year reports of folks seeing snowies from the windows of their departing airplanes, and it's happening again this year. At least it happened once, as Mike Resch from Pepperell reports on the MassBird Forum. He says, a week ago, I had my window seat on a flight departing Logan and was lucky enough to see two snowy owls while my plane taxied. Today, on this week's flight back home, I saw one snowy. It was sitting on the same light pole as one from last week, so likely the same bird. So you might not get any peanuts, but you get some snowy owls there. And Norman Smith from Mass Audubon, of course, is the guy that goes there and traps snowy owls at Logan Airport and releases them far away from that dangerous locale. So, Norman, it sounds like you may have a couple of customers waiting for you there. Meanwhile, that beautiful black-backed woodpecker visiting from way up north is still regaling folks with its spectacular looks and powerful pecking over at Forest Hills Cemetery in Boston's Jamaica Plain neighborhood. It's a big deal because this bird is normally found way up in the boreal spruce and fir forests from Newfoundland to Alaska. And while it is rare, it's not the first time it's been spotted in Massachusetts. Our good friend Wayne Peterson recalls seeing one when he was a very young birder in the late 1950s. His sighting was unusual enough that it was featured in an article in a Boston newspaper. Of course, Wayne is known far and wide these days as a birder, but at that time he regarded the article as producing his 15 minutes of fame. In seventh grade, as Wayne puts it, this is as good as it gets. Eighth grade, that's different, but hey, a reminder that our phone lines are always open here on Talkin' Birds. If you have a cool sighting to report or a question or comment, please give us a call at 781-837-4900. Let's check in, see about
the view from the corner office.
Yeah, the view from the corner office. That would be our Talkin' Birds world headquarters with our little sliver of a view of Boston Harbor. Been a little slow out there so far this year, but it is picking up. Finally seeing some common eiders out there joining the red-breasted mergansers and lots of buffleheads and some scaup this week as well. Greater scaup, we think, but not exactly sure about that. But wonderful to see those birds out there in our
view from the corner office.
At the old corner office. Yeah.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Well, here are some of the stories and pictures and videos you can find on our Talkin' Birds Facebook page this week. Let's see. Here's the first one. Pigeons head bobbing explained. We'll link you to the story. Hint, it's not about balance. Lots of people kind of think that it is. Well, despite heated debate, it seems that bird advocates have lost the battle to have bird-safe glass used for the new Vikings football stadium in Minneapolis. And you thought Deflategate was bad. On a brighter note, more conservation dollars will be going toward saving the golden-winged warbler. We have the link to the story on our Facebook page. And researchers at Stanford University are creating a device to measure lift during bird flight. The video shows one of the test subjects, a Pacific parrotlet named Ray. Just some of the stories and pictures and videos appearing on our Talkin' Birds Facebook page this week. And don't forget, if you're not a Facebook fan, You can still find most of these stories through an online search. Well, instead of a conservation salute this week, there's a little climate change note, a little progress being made here. This past Wednesday, the United States Senate voted in favor of an amendment by Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat, Rhode Island, that stated climate change is real and is not a hoax. The amendment passed 98-1 with only Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker voting no. Well, still to come on our show today, what great thing can you do in 15 minutes in your backyard? We'll find out when we welcome a special guest from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology to Talkin' Birds this morning. We'll also welcome our bird feeding and attracting expert, Mike O'Connor from Cape Cod's Birdwatchers General Store, as we do every week. Today, Mike will answer a listener's questions about those big, bad blue jays. Plus, we'll head out west to find this morning's mystery bird. The first listener to ID it will win a fabulous feeder from Droll Yankees, makers of the world's best bird feeders. And up next,
it was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
Well, the one-horn part is correct. Let's meet today's Talkin' Birds featured feathered friend.
Here's the sound of a rhinoceros. And here's the sound of a rhinoceros auklet. Kind of surprising, they don't sound all that different from one another, considering that the former is a lumbering beast native to Africa and Asia, weighing up to 4 tons, and the latter is a small seabird that weighs about 16 ounces. And why would a small seabird like that be called rhinoceros auklet? Well, for the same reason that it's also called unicorn puffin. Its name is inspired by the presence of a vertical white plate at the base of its orange bill that juts upward, a bit like the horn of a rhinoceros. Or if you prefer a more phantasmagorical interpretation, like that of a unicorn. The rhinoceros auklet is a medium-sized, stocky water bird, about 11 inches long, all dark gray except for a white belly. The breeding adult develops that white horn at the base of its bill in early spring and then sheds it in late summer. In North America, our bird breeds from California to the Aleutian Islands of Alaska and winters along most of the U.S. West Coast. It surface dives for fish, using its wings to swim. It nests on islands, digging long burrows in the soil under grass and shrubs and trees. The rhinoceros auklet is the only member of its genus, and although it's called an auklet, it's believed to be more closely related to puffins, as that unicorn puffin nickname would suggest. The rhinoceros auklet. Today's Talkin' Birds featured feathered friend.
Thanks again for being with us. Our show number 510. Did I call this show number 509 earlier? I think I was off by one there. I don't know who's keeping track of this out there. We'll hear from somebody. Don't forget to follow us if you can on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at Talkin' Birds. Thank you for that. Last year, participants turned in 144,000 online checklists, if I have this number right, creating the world's largest instantaneous snapshot of bird populations ever recorded through something called the Great Backyard Bird Count, a joint project of National Audubon and Cornell Lab of Ornithology with Canadian partner Bird Studies of Canada. And right now, from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, where she wears many hats, including staff writer, and in this case, she is the coordinator for the Cornell part of this joint project, she is Pat Leonard. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Ray. To all your loyal listeners on the frosty morning in the Northeast.
Well, you're in where? Utica, New York, and you have pretty much the same weather as we have here, I think.
Pretty much. At the moment, I'm visiting my mother, so yes, I'm in Utica, but typically I would be in Ithaca, where the lab is located.
Right. And you said you may miss the big blizzard that's coming, but we're still not going to hang up on you.
Okay.
All right.
But just, I'm not wishing it upon you, but that's just the way it goes.
We appreciate that. So tell us about it, Pat. We know it's big, but what is the Great Bird, Great Backyard Bird Count? Why is it so important?
Well, it comes up every year. This is our 18th year, actually, and it's usually held in the based on when the President's Day holiday falls in the U.S. So this year it's February 13th through the 16th. It's a four-day event. And what we ask people to do is to simply to go out every day or one day or 2 day, whatever their schedule allows, mm-hmm. and spend at least 15 minutes counting birds. You know, either could be at their feeders. It doesn't necessarily have to be in their backyard. It could be in a nearby park, it could be at the town dump, it could be wherever they know the birds are and they'd like to go and watch them for a while and get an idea of the numbers of each species that they're seeing. You know, take note of that and then enter their data online at birdcount.org, which is the website for the GBBC, which is our shorthand way of referring to it.
Okay.
And, you know, we get all these reports in. The count went global about 2013. Mm-hmm. And so now we're getting them from all over the world. But in fact, you know, because it's relatively new internationally, the bulk of the data still comes from the U.S. and Canada, and but with a growing presence from places like India, Australia, Argentina, those sorts of things. And what this helps us do is, the real value of this, I should say, is this over the long term, because you can't make a judgment based on 1 year to the next, because bird populations change so much.
Mm-hmm.
But over the long term, you can tell what is changing in terms of numbers and the distribution of specific species of birds.
And that's where all those big numbers come in to help that be possible.
Yes, yes.
It's so amazing to look at the map and to see all the places where people are participating. As you said, North America, and it looks like from Alaska down through Mexico and into Central America, you can't see the landmass for all the yellow dots there. But it's fascinating to see other parts of the world. As you mentioned, India. It looks like a huge participation there.
We have a great, they're really growing there, and part of it is we have a big presence there for eBird, which is the online checklist program upon which the GBBC is based, and it's basically free to use year-round to report birds, and we just hone in on this weekend to get a particularly succinct snapshot of what the birds are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But we had 135 countries participating in the GBBC last year, so that's significant. And the number of species they reported is about, I think it was close to half or just under half of the existing species in the world, so that's pretty neat.
Wow.
And, you know, I would like to see it keep growing each year. It has, of course, grown significantly since it started in 1998. And it was started kind of as a, gee, I wonder if we could use this newfangled internet thing to get people to report the birds they see.
Yeah, maybe.
And, you know, imagine it. It really worked, and it's grown a lot. eBird was formed in 2002, and it's just taken off from there. And then we kind of merged with eBird in 2013 to go global, and it just keeps growing from there. So it's probably one of the biggest citizen science projects that exists right now.
In the world, what would you say are some of the most significant or most important things that have been learned since this started in 98?
Well, the value of GBBC or something like eBird, too, is the value of stepping back and looking at it, you know, in a really big, big picture, because that's where you can tell if there are significant trends in bird populations. For example, when West Nile virus arrived in North America, you know, if you just looked in your own neighborhood, you say, well, I got plenty of crows. I got too many crows. But when you step back and look at it on a continental scale, we could see that their populations dropped significantly after West Nile arrived, and they're starting to rebound just a little bit. But you wouldn't know that if you just paid attention just to your town or your state even. Mm-hmm. You'd have to look at it on a very broad scale to see these kinds of population-type trends. And that's really the value of this kind of survey.
So speaking of trends, what about scientists gaining info or insight about climate change through the count results? And are the climate change effects being noted through shifting bird populations?
Again, it's going to be over long term that we see that. GBBC is relatively young in that this will be our 18th year. But and bird populations, of course, as you're listeners all know, do change significantly from year to year. I mean, they fluctuate a lot. But over time, with the GBBC and with other long-term counts on eBird or the Christmas bird count, things that we start to see, birds returning sooner from migration or building nests sooner, is something we might see with our Nest Watch program. And then, you know, shifting ranges, you know, or birds staying farther north later in the winter than we would typically see because there's open water, for example, for water birds, so they can still stick around. Whereas, you know, last year we had a really cold winter in the Great Lakes, nearly all froze. You know, a lot of those birds couldn't get to open water, so they dropped farther down. So there are certain overall trends, and then there's certain blips. You know, if there's a, you know, a sudden freeze, you can see what's happening, how birds are reacting to that kind of a climate condition.
Well, Pat, people love top 10 lists. We know that, but you have one, I think, for the top 10 birds that are seen all over the country at feeders. Am I right?
Well, not necessarily feeders, but all over the place.
All
how
over
many
the
top 10 species reported?
Yeah.
And, you know, because most of the data is still significantly from North America, these are obviously North American birds, but, and these would be very familiar to your listeners if they have feeders or just anywhere in the Northeast. You know, Northern Cardinal is number one, of course, followed by Dark-Eyed Junco, the Mourning Dove, Blue Jay, Downy Woodpecker, American Goldfinch, the American Crow, the House Finch, the Tufted Titmouse. And last but not least, at number 10 is the house sparrow. Not necessarily everyone's favorite bird, but there's a lot of them, so it's up there on the list.
Not one that some folks want to count, but folks want to count those birds. What an amazing project it is. Give us a quick recap again how to join and what the website is.
Well, it's free, so you don't have to worry about paying anything.
Okay. Nice.
You just go out, and we ask that you count birds for at least one day, at least 15 minutes.
Yep.
And you're going to put together a checklist and count the species that you see. There are lots of instructions on the website about how to do this exactly, so I won't bore you with those details now. But it really would be a good idea to go there. And we have downloadable instructions and a little PowerPoint presentation and things that will help you figure out exactly how we want you to count so it's consistent. But once you've made up your bird checklist, you'll go there, and there's a place that says, you know, enter your checklists, you know, and you go in there. You do have to set up a free account, and the reasoning for that is so that you can go back in. If you feel like you've made a mistake, you can go back in and correct it.
Okay.
And so that's a valuable thing. And then you can also keep track of your sightings from year to year and then explore what other people are doing and, you know, just make it a lot easier on yourself to keep track of what your sightings are, not just for GBBC, but also year-round if you decide to keep using eBird.
All right. Pat Leonard, among many other jobs, including staff writer at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, is the coordinator for this great, great backyard bird project. Pat, thank you and good luck.
Thanks. Nice talking to you, and have a good morning, all your listeners there.
All right. Thanks, Pat. Coming up next, it's our Mystery Bird Contest in just 1 minute.
Public ferry service to the Boston Harbor Islands has ended for the season, but you can still visit the beautiful Boston Harbor Islands peninsulas open year-round. World's End in Hingham, Deer Island in Winthrop, Webb Memorial Park in Weymouth, and Nut Island in Quincy. They're connected to the mainland and accessible by car, offering stunning views of Boston Harbor and its islands, plus birding, hiking, biking, and cross-country skiing. Enjoy your national park all year long. For more information, please visit bostonharborislands.org.
Here on Talkin' Birds Now, a message from our friends at Ducks Unlimited.
Since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been a world leader in wetlands conservation, ensuring safe passage for nature's most beautiful creations, protection against flooding, and sanctuary for the human soul. If we don't want to grow old in a world without wild places, we must speak up. We must step up, so that we may fill the skies for generations to come.
The Mystery Bird Contest every week here on Talkin' Birds. We describe a bird, give some clues, play the song, or call, and invite you to call in and tell us what it is. If you haven't won within 6 months on Talkin' Birds, you're eligible. Call us early if you can, as early as possible in the process at 781-837-4900, 781-837-4900. Our prize is the really popular Droll Yankees Observer Window Feeder. That's the one that attaches right onto your window with those really strong suction cups. It does not fall off, and you have the birds right next to your window. 781-837-4900. Here's the sound of the mystery bird. Our mystery bird, slightly larger than its relatives like the blue jay and the gray jay, for example. It's mostly black and white with blue-green iridescent flashes on the wings and on the diamond-shaped tail. Our bird found mostly in the west and northwest, all the way up into Alaska, in towns and fields and along stream sides, foraging on the ground for everything from seeds and wild fruits to grasshoppers and beetles. Kind of an omnivore, as they say. That's our mystery bird. What do you think it is? Tell us or take a guess, because no correct answer means a drawing will determine our winner. So it's nothing like a contest where you can get the not quite right answer and still win, but it's possible here. 781-837-4900 is the number to call. And speaking of Blue Jays, not everybody loves them. We'll find out about that with our man Mike O'Connor. Let's ask Mike in just 1 minute.
There's a crisis facing us today that reaches far beyond borders or boundaries. It's our planet, and it's in trouble. Scientists estimate that climate change will increasingly alter our planet, and many of our land and water resources will be at risk. Without them, we could lose many of the natural habitats that support life on Earth. Not only will numerous plant and animal species disappear, but the quality of life, for all of us, will never be the same. What scientists haven't calculated is the power of the human will to work together to save the future of our natural world and all of its inhabitants. If you're ready to make a difference that lasts, to help protect nature and preserve life, visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org today. That's nature.org today.
Let's ask Mike, in which we ask Mike O'Connor of the legendary Bird Watchers General Store in Orleans a question that we've received via email, and we're about to do that right now. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Ray.
How's it going?
Wow, you know, I just woke up, but it's okay. Just getting my pajamas off, and I'm ready to go.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Denton's with the little feet, right? Well, here's our question, Mike. It says, we would like to ask Mike, how can we keep the Blue Jays from emptying the feeder? They hoard the sunflower seeds until the feeder is empty. They bully the quieter, shy birds. This is a whole story, not just a question. I've tried setting up a separate feeder with corn, but the squirrels ate the feeder. Blue Jays are beautiful, and they have to eat too, but is there a feeder or certain feed that will attract them away from the sunflower feeder? Thanks for your help, Margaret W.
Margaret W.
Hmm.
Here's the deal on the Jays. A lot of people don't realize that in the fall and early winter, the Jays really hit the feeders hard because they stash food for the winter.
Yeah.
So most of the time, or a good portion of the season, we're not too upset with the Jays, but then bang, that's all that's there. In the fall, they're there bang, coming in back and forth, because they get a big crop full, or they, not even a crop, they kind of, they have an expandable throat where they stash a lot of
them
feed,
and then carry them away.
And carry them away, and they're back and forth. So it seems like there's more Jays than there really are.
Mm-hmm.
As the winter winds down, and they become less of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But even still, I don't know of a seed that they'll more readily go to than sunflower, but there are a few seeds that they're not particularly fond of, and that some of the other, like she wants the little cutie shy birds to come to. Obviously thistle and the thistle too.
Mm-hmm.
They can pick at that. And there is a seed called safflower seed.
Yeah.
And they'll often leave that alone, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you could, if you've got a feeder that the Jays are really trashing, put some safflower in there, and they'll probably leave that alone.
And then go to the other one.
They'll go to the other one. Well, and there are some J-proof feeders, the kind that that go down with, that are weight-sensitive.
Yeah, like for squirrels, but on a more sensitive.
Right.
Yeah.
And that would be the other alternative, too.
All right.
You could try one of those guys.
Hope that worked for you, Margaret. And, Mike, we'll see you next week.
You got it, Ray.
Hey, we can relate to that episode of Let's Ask Mike. We have a really boisterous blue jay out here just outside in our Talking Birds garden this morning. He is letting everyone know that he is in charge, or it could be she, actually, come to think of it. Let's see. By the way, we just got a big new batch of Mike's great new book, Why Do Bluebirds Hate Me? That's our thank you gift. If you send a question to Mike, send it to Ray at TalkinBirds.com. Back to the Mystery Bird Contest, trying to identify this bird. Speaking of blue jays, I think we indicated it's slightly larger than its relatives, like the blue jay and the gray jay, for example. Mostly black and white with blue-green iridescent flashes on the wings and on the diamond-shaped tail. And you know, we neglected to mention something important. It has a very dark bill. It has a dark bill. That's kind of important, I think, there. Our bird found mostly in the west and northwest, all the way up to Alaska, in towns and fields and stream sides foraging on the ground for everything from seeds and wild fruits to grasshoppers and beetles. 781-837-4900 is the number. And Joanne is with us from Portland, Maine. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thank you. How are things up there? How's your snow situation?
Well, it's going to start tomorrow night, so mm-hmm. we're hunkering down.
All right. Well, you're kind of used to that in Maine.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, sort of. So what do you think, Joanne, on the mystery bird?
Well, the guess that I originally thought, mm-hmm. now that I heard the description a little bit more, I think mm-hmm. I'm probably not correct, but my original guess was the Western scrub jay.
Uh-huh. So that is your guess, then?
Yeah, it is.
Tim? No, Tim is giving a very sympathetic look there, Joanne, but not a Western scrub jay, but a certainly a top-quality answer.
Okay, I'll think about it.
You do that. Call us again.
Okay,
and good luck with the snow.
Thank you.
All right. Joanne in Portland, Maine, with a guess of a Western scrub jay. We're obviously kind of in the family here. What do you think it is? Give us a call here and let us know what you think it is on our Mystery Bird Contest. 781-837-4900 is the number. If you missed it earlier, our prize is that beautiful Droll Yankees Observer window feeder. That's the one that is a favorite of many people because it attaches right onto your window. So there's nothing between you and the birds that show up. But the window itself. Madonna is in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. Hey there, Madonna.
Ray, how are you? Good morning.
I'm well. How's it going? Any snow out? You must have a little snow. You got a little snow there?
Little snow. Already did my shoveling.
All right. Ready to do a lot more soon, I think.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Mystery bird, Madonna, what do you say?
I'm guessing the magpie.
All right. We want to try to... Can we narrow it down a little bit or... I gave a little extra clue there to help in that. I'm not sure if you heard that.
No, I don't. I don't know.
All right.
The magpie.
I'll tell you what we do. If nobody gets it more specific, then you will be our winner, but we'll give somebody else a shot at it.
Thanks, Ray. Nice talking to you.
You too, Madonna. Thank you. Madonna, guessing a magpie, and I guess we've kind of given away the fact that that is not an incorrect answer, but we're trying to narrow it down a little bit. We have Jesse in St. Catharine, Ontario. Good morning, Jesse.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And how did you find us up there in Ontario?
I've been listening to you for a while, actually. I won one of those Birds and Beans bags recently.
Yes. Have you tried it?
It's fantastic.
Nice. We'll tell our friends at Birds and Beans. So, Mystery Bird Contest, Jesse, what do you say?
It's a black-bill magpie.
Wow. That was very definitive the way you said that. That wasn't a question, that was a statement. Black-billed magpie.
Sure.
Probably not, I don't know, in Ontario, do you see any?
No, absolutely not. I actually seen some in Europe, and obviously not a black-billed, but, you know, they're cousins in Europe, but I've never seen one out west. Hopefully next time I go up there, I get lucky.
All right, well, good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Stay on the line, Jesse. We'll send you that beautiful Droll Yankees feeder. You can stick it on your window there.
Fantastic.
All right. Jesse, up in...
My downy that got to my feeder right now.
They're at your feeder right now?
Yeah, I was just listening to the top 10, and here's a downy just to confirm he's one of the top 10.
All right. It's something famous showing up there.
There you go.
All right, Jesse, thank you. All right, black-billed magpie, the answer we were looking for. What an interesting birds, and kind of a lot of historical references, too, in the American West about black-billed magpies associated with people for a long time. On their expedition, Lewis and Clark reported magpies boldly entering their tents to steal food out there in that big exhibition. Are we out of time, Tim? I think we pretty much are. We have some big news to announce very soon about a far-flung location from which Talkin' Birds will be broadcast very soon. We're heading way south. We'll have details probably on our next show. The executive producer of Talkin' Birds is Mark Duffield. Our associate producer is Emma Morgenstern. Our engineer is Tim McKenney. I'm Ray Brown. See you next week.
The Bird Show. I like that.
Ray Brown's Talkin' Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Bird Watchers General Store, Route 6A, Orleans, Cape Cod. by the Boston Harbor Island Alliance. Minutes away, worlds apart.
I love Talking Birds. I love that show.